So my name's Ruth, and I don't want to drink today. My home group is sure it works for you online, and I see a few familiar faces, so thank you for coming. I don't know if you come to this group otherwise, but I like to think you're here to see me. anyways, how long do I got? 20 minutes, right? Is that max?
Pretty open, yeah. It's newer.
Okay. I just like to set a timer so I can, like... I'm coming up on a sobriety date. I'm a little nervous. Just give me a sec. All right. So I have 17 years sobriety. I came into AA when I was first exposed. I was very young. I was 13 when I came to my first Alateen meeting, and I was 16 when I was court ordered for a DWI. Shortly after being emancipated. So, I wanted to focus today a little bit more on, just how I work the steps. I think every time I'm coming up on an anniversary, a sobriety anniversary next month, and I always get in this like reflective state. And, I think one of the things that's worked for me over the years is to continue to kind of take an inventory of how my program is working for me. You know, what worked for me a year ago or 10 years ago might not work for me today. There's certain things that are steadfast and true. And I'd say the thing that's always worked for me is connecting with others, finding a way to connect with others. Alcoholism, my alcoholism, it warped my perception. And so it prevented me from able to connect authentically with other people. And that kept me sick for a long time. And it kept me sick even in sobriety, for a period. The good news is if for me, anyways, my experience is that when I kept coming around AA and kept putting myself around people, it's kind of that quantity versus quality. I did it enough that I was able to kind of break down some of these barriers and start working some of these steps. So when I came in, I did work AA kind of like the traditional way. I first started regularly attending meetings in the 90s. So it was 96 when I first came in, and I was pretty young, and there was not a lot of females where I was, and I went through a lot of sponsors. Because they said women sponsor women and men sponsor men. That's how the traditional way was, at least where I'm from. And, you know, there'd be one woman for every 35 men. And so whether she had a good program or not, she'd just be your sponsor. And I had a sponsor that stabbed one of my friend's dads at 35 years sobriety. I had a sponsor kill herself. I had a sponsor relapse, who I then later ended up sponsoring, you know. So I guess my point even bringing that up is sobriety isn't a hierarchy. You don't get to a point and then like, oh, I'm healthy because I have this much sobriety. You can work really good program and have great sobriety and a deep and meaningful life and give back at very low amounts of sobriety. And you can be sober a long time and not be a very happy person or not be a very productive member of society. So I guess having my early experience with that in traditional AA, while I knew that I needed other people to stay sober, I wasn't so sure that I always wanted to be around those people. So I would have these intermittent, you know, I'd go off and do something else, go join a church, go do whatever. Almost inevitably, I would relapse and then I'd burn my life down again and I'd find myself back in the rooms. That's kind of my, like, I spent about 8 years around AA trying to get sober. I spent the last 2 years of that 8 year period really wanting to be sober, not being able to, coming to meetings drunk, not understanding why I could wake up with the best of intentions and then something would happen and I would end up drunk. And, you know, when people are chronic relapsers, I really have a soft spot in my heart for you. And all I can say is just keep coming, just keep trying, because I don't know what the magic button was for me. I don't know why my last drunk was my last drunk. It was relatively uneventful compared to my prior, you know, downfalls with alcohol. But what was really different was how quickly I got involved with other people and how quickly I went to AA. I went to 3 AA meetings a day for like months, and that's what I needed. I just needed to be around people and connect. I feel like, I miss that day in school, you know, where to play well with others, and AA kind of helped me bridge that gap. So to try and give some focus, I wrote down this morning before I really had coffee. So I don't know how great it'll be, but I wrote down kind of my today interpretation of the steps, just short, rewritten for me. So I have one as we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that it has warped our senses of reality. I think for me, that was really true. I could be on the top of the heap or the bottom of the heap, but I could not live in just regular world. I always had just something in conflict, and my alcoholism just, it prevented me from seeing reality. So step two, came to believe that a power outside of ourselves that is stronger than alcohol, and that I would, and that we are worthy of sobriety. I think when I first came into AA, I always say step one is what got me here. That's what got me. Like, I needed to get my card signed. I'm an alcoholic. Shit happens when I drink. What kept me here is step two. Not so much the God piece. I'm an atheist, whatever. But I could not stay sober on myself. I couldn't do it. I tried multiple times. And so I needed something else. And that AA group, that was that. The other part of that, and when I think in the original step, it says came to believe, you know, could restore us to sanity. That wording was a little rough to me because I was so young. I didn't have this life that I lost. I just grew up in craziness. But how I interpret it is this will work for you. This program, I see it working. It works for other people, but it's not going to work for me. And here's why. And I had these ideas of chronic uniqueness that I was too far gone or too whatever. And so for me, really believing that I am worthy of sobriety, that this will and can work for anyone that puts in that, you know, that wants it really. So that's my little version of step two. Step three, made a decision to seek help, the help we need to heal our bodies and minds. This is a huge one for me because when I 11 months into sobriety, I had a trauma that really effed me up, and I had a lot of mental health problems. I was sleeping in my car. I was keeping food in my pockets. I couldn't function. I was working like 4 hours a day in a warehouse because that's all I could manage doing was moving boxes. And part of, you know, the original step three is made a decision to turn our will and our lives with the care of God as we understood him. Well, I mean, how turning something over to some entity isn't going to get me mental health need, you know, my needs met. It's not going to drive my ass to an AA meeting. You know, I have to make decisions in my day-to-day life to do the things that I know I need to do or to be open to suggestions. And one of the things that I've been kind of working with lately, an analogy I really like, is kind of thinking of a higher power as my GPS. So in this context for step three, I don't believe, you know, Jesus take the wheel or anything like that. I do believe that I will run on my defaults all the time. I will always do the path of least resistance. And a very literal example of this is we had a road that was like to get to my house that is no longer there. They literally blew up the road and you can't drive there. And that does not stop me for months getting off on the wrong exit because I'm going to go down this road because I still think it's there. Like that's my default. And to combat this, I do things like tell my husband, like, hey, remind me there's no road there. Or, you know, write a note. There's no road. Leave 5 minutes early. It's going to take you longer to get the kids from school. Or one time I even had to put on the GPS because I didn't have time to waste. I needed to get where I was going, and I couldn't have this weird detour where I'm thinking there's a road and there isn't one. So I like to kind of think today as using a higher power is like using GPS. Anything that I'm going to use where I'm going to believe that you know where you're going or where to help me reach my destination, whether that be my mental health, my physical health, my spiritual health. You know, somebody knows how to do this and they can offer me directions. And it's up to me to be willing to take it. Step four, made an inventory of the times we violated our own morals, ethics, and virtues. So I was in conflict a lot. The first time I did my fourth step, I don't even think I felt bad for half of the stuff I wrote down. It was just like, you're not supposed to steal. I stole a lot. I guess that goes on my list. Like I was not in touch with what my values were, and they certainly didn't match my sponsors because I'm not going to sidetrack. I got stories, but anyways, and as it made clear through time and working the steps, it's like, write the shit down that's going to get you drunk. Write down the things that you're like, man, I wish that didn't happen, or it just keeps, you know, the stuff that kept popping into my head. And sometimes it was like a place. Like I'd drive by my school that I dropped out of as a kid, and I'd feel bad about that. And it wasn't the school itself. It's the fact that I didn't finish something. I had this shame, you know, I wasn't educated. Which, by the way, I did get my college degree in sobriety. So it does work and you can do amazing things. But so writing down that inventory, just however that looks, you can do, you know, columns or however, whatever works. But at the end of the day for me, it was writing down the stuff that were renting space in my head, whatever that was. Then step five, share this inventory with another person with an open mind and heart. You know, sharing it with another person who for me, it was my sponsor who could care less. She was very underwhelmed, I think, and that's fine. That was the kind of humility shot I needed. I thought I had a really, you know, adventurous drunkalog, and turns out I'm just a run-of-the-mill, normal, average alcoholic. So, but to get all that stuff outside of me, I didn't have to own it anymore. It was gone. All that power it had over me, being inside me, gone. So then step six, made a decision to rewrite the default behavior that caused ourselves and others harm. You know, the original step six is, the shortcomings one. I can't even remember how it is right now. But for me, being able to just see it for what it is. A lot of these behaviors worked when I was younger. They worked when I was drinking. Guess what? They don't work for me today. And I'm going to make mistakes. And I got to have some grace with myself that, hey, you know, I was taught to do these things by life. And now I want a different life. So I have to do things differently. And that means all sorts of things. And when I'm aware of them, I got to take action. I can't just be like, oh, well, that's just the way I am. You know, you know, how I am is a drunk, a self-destructive drunk. So if I want to be something different, I got to change all those defaults. And then, step seven, this one, I kind of like how I think of it today, share our struggles with others and strive to live in the solution. So this is the one where it's like, come away, ask God to remove our shortcomings, you know. We're all going to make mistakes. And to me, the power and the healing comes in sharing that, you know, I can tell you lots of ways not to work the steps and that can be helpful. You know, it's nice to hear what works too, but, when I make a mistake, when I do something, you know, I don't have to own it alone anymore, whatever it is. And then step eight, made a list of all people, places, and institutions we have harmed by our actions or inactions. That's pretty self-explanatory. Nine, made restitution in every area possible, except when to do so would cause more harm to others. I think there's always a way to make restitution. I always like the example. A lot of people, at least for me, when I came in, I had a lot of lovers in my past life, and I thought that they needed to hear how sorry I was for whatever. And it was very helpful for me to have a sponsor saying, you know how you can make amends? By leaving them F alone. Like, you didn't bring anything good to their life. Sometimes your absence is the best gift. So working with somebody else, like any of these steps or any of these things in this program, having someone to run these things by is super helpful. Because I can have some really good ideas, that sound pretty dumb the moment they come out of my mouth, but. So then step 10, continue to create new default behaviors and have grace with myself and others who fall short. So, you know, continually looking back on what are these things that I want to do differently? How can I be better? I mean, we're all just humans, right? You know, so, step 11, this one's pretty important to me today. I'd say with three, this is probably the one that's like in the front of my mind, which again might be kind of weird for an atheist, but. Sought through self-reflection and meditation to connect with the world around us, striving always to be of maximum service to others. You know, I think of when I was drinking or in early sobriety, I could not pause. My mind was always so busy. I couldn't stop thinking. I couldn't stop talking. I couldn't stop moving, whatever. Meditation gave me the ability to pause and to be able to recognize moments where pausing is helpful. And whether that's just a few deep breaths in the car, or whatever, I can reclaim that power at any point during my life. And doing that allows me to be present. And if I'm present, I can see what's in front of me. And it's the right thing to do is usually pretty clear. You know, I can help someone. I can do something helpful. I can be productive, whatever that is. But none of that's going to happen or even be known to me if I can't be present. And that comes through meditation. And a lot of my meditation throughout the day is breathing. And then a lot of my self-reflection, I have like a series of mantras. I write my own mantras. I write. I do all sorts of practices. Sometimes I paint, whatever it is, to get all parts of myself connected, so I can show up to be the best version of myself. And then step 12, once we have overcome our struggle with alcohol and found freedom in a new life, we're open to sharing our experience, strength, and hope with others so that we may keep this new life by giving it away. And, you know, that's why I'm here, I guess, is, you know, I really like my life today. I have a life that I can't even believe. I feel so ridiculously blessed. It's like I'm almost embarrassed to share, you know, how good my life is in comparison to where I came from. And if you, you know me and you know all the nuances, like things like this morning, I woke up in a bed with an electric blanket. It's 45 below zero right now outside. I have two little children sitting next to me that are warm, snug in a bug. Our heat got cut down in the middle of the night because they have these energy surges and the electric company controls our thermostat. And it was fine. Didn't even notice, you know. My dogs won't go outside, but besides that, it's just a regular morning in our household. There are so many different experiences I've had in the past where weather was a huge variable in how I live my life. And today, it's like, oh, I guess we're not going to the park today, you know. Just something that little, I can find the gratitude in that. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that, but that's why I have notes, trying to keep me on track. I have a few mantras that I want to share that work for me in different periods of my life, along with that self-reflection and kind of theme of moving forward. These are things that, so I'm going to back up a minute. Somebody once told me that God is whatever you think about when you first wake up. And that made a lot of sense to me because for many years, what I thought about when I first woke up was drinking. So drinking alcohol was my God. Simple. Got that. All right, you take that away, what's left? What am I going to think about? I tried just thinking about me. That didn't work very well. And I tried, you know, lots of things have been God for me over my life. So today I try and have very clear thoughts right when I'm conscious. And I've done it so long that it almost comes intuitively now. I don't have to put in much effort. One of the words that comes into my mind the most often is bonus. I get to be here today. Bonus. This is all bonus. You know, my life should have come out a lot differently than it did. Yet here I am, you know, bonus. So that's a mantra word I use. Another thing I like to tell myself is life will go on with or without you. That's a pretty easy thing for me to think about, especially with young kids. Doesn't matter if I'm sick. Doesn't matter if I don't feel good. Doesn't matter if my foot hurts. Doesn't matter if I'm sad. These kids are going to wake up. They're going to want food. They're going to want whatever. They're kids. And that's just a very clear in the moment example of how life goes on with or without me. I can be a part of life, or I can retreat inside myself. It's a choice, and I have that choice every single day. Another one that I like in my more reflective moments is the measure of a good life is a good death. I've been around AA long enough and, you know, met enough people that I've seen a lot of bad deaths. I've seen too many bad deaths in AA, but I've also seen a lot of good ones. We had a friend pass recently who knew she was passing, wrote up a series of Facebook posts to haunt her sponsees, you know, died peacefully surrounded by one she loved. Left a legacy in AA, left family members who love and smile when they talk about her. You know, that's some really cool stuff. And I've seen enough of that to be like, that's out there for me. That's what I want. How do I get that? I live a good life every day. I don't leave loose ends. You know, if I can resolve something today, I do it. And I find time to just connect. That's why I'm here, right? Another thing is, this one saved me a lot, especially with some of my mental health stuff. Look up. Not look up to God, not look up to the heavens, just literally look up. Whenever I'm stressed, usually in waiting rooms, I don't know how many waiting rooms I've been in, like, oh no, what's the doctor going to say or whatever. Look up. I'm amazed at how much beautiful architecture there is in the world, how many things you'll see on the ceiling, how many little random bugs you'll see in the middle of winter just clinging on or whatever. You know, there's so much. Just look up. Our world, my world, my disease of alcoholism messes with my perception in so many ways, my perception of reality and just where I literally look. So looking up changes that. It challenges it and reminds me that this world is a lot bigger than I know. And if I'm not willing to look around to it, I might miss some. So another thing is when in doubt, do nothing. I like that. I think first 3 years of my sobriety probably hinged on this. There's lots of things, you know, later in life, when I had more skills, I can say, oh, whatever, problem, I talk, or I do this, or I write, or these are all things I learned. When I first was learning, just do nothing, just wait. whatever decision that needs to be made right then probably doesn't need to be made. And the more urgent it feels, the probably more likely it is that you shouldn't make a decision. At least for me. So that's been my experience. And I guess I have two more. It's okay to be angry, not to be hurtful. And I say that a lot to my children. It's okay to be pissed off. It's okay to want to go, oh, there's my timer. I'll wrap it up here. You know, it's okay to be pissed off and take my aggressions out of a pillow or whatever. I can be angry about anything. I have that right. It's not okay for me to transport that anger onto somebody else. And that's something I still work with, you know. I have PTSD. I get triggered occasionally, and it's ugly when I get triggered. And you know what I can do? I can walk away. I can walk away. And that's a choice I have, even in those most heated moments where it's fight or flight and my body feels, you know, whatever. I have a choice today. And probably one of my more favorite ones that, my last one, I guess, is just slow down. For me, there's a girl, Marsha, that says she's a hummingbird on Red Bull. And I love that analogy because that's like, that's me. Like, I'm in a big hurry to get nowhere. Like, everything, I wanted to do all the steps in 12 weeks. I want to win. I want to get there. I want to be done because I have more important shit to do. And that's not true. It's not true. I have nowhere to be. I have nothing to do. I just have to be here, be me, be the best I can be right now in this moment, and slow down. I used to wear a little sloth necklace to remind me, you know, just slow down. So those are kind of all my thoughts all jumbled together. And, you know, it really means a lot to me to be able to come and be with you people online. You know, I don't know many of you. We're in different parts of the world. You know, this program is so big and all inclusive that we can find these commonalities. And I think that's so beautiful. So I love you all. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me. And I'm done talking.